Donald Trump, in one of his first acts as president, has reinstated the so-called Mexico City policy. The measure forbids the U.S. from funding any group that provides abortion overseas or even gives out information about abortion overseas. The policy dates back to the Reagan era. It was introduced in Mexico City before becoming law under Reagan, hence the Mexico City policy. Bill Clinton repealed it. It was then reinstated by George W. Bush, rescinded again under Barack Obama, and now it's been reinstated by Donald Trump. Sense a pattern here? Only this time under Trump, there are even more restrictions than under any other Republican administration. The World's Jasmine Garz has done extensive reporting on the Mexico City policy. What does this policy actually state, Jasmine?
So the Mexico City policy states that organizations that get USAID are not allowed to be associated in any way with any other groups that provide abortion. So they can't actively promote abortion, meaning they can't refer people or give information about abortion. And they can't have any links to other organizations that do anything related to abortion.
Right. And under Obama for the past 8 years, that policy had been rescinded. So money was provided by the Agency for International Development for all sorts of things, including family planning and abortion. So no more of that under Trump. How much more restrictive will his iteration of the Mexico City policy be?
So his version of the policy does sound more restrictive. His memo calls for extending that rule to global health assistance furnished by all departments or agencies. So it would take it beyond USAID.
How much further beyond are we talking about?
The problem here is there's no numbers. It's very unclear how much we're talking about. I think it's really important to clarify here that it's not a huge portion of money from USAID that goes to anything related to abortion. I think that's a big misconception. Most of USAID's budget goes to promoting economic empowerment, training women, stopping violence, getting girls in school. This is not a huge amount of the budget.
Don't many of these NGOs, though, provide a whole array of family planning and health services that could be affected, though?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's going to depend a lot on each NGO. I mean, the NGOs that I have spoken to have said, you know, we stand firmly against this policy and will continue to work in ways we believe best serve our population. But yes, absolutely. I mean, these aren't NGOs that only provide abortion services. They provide family planning. A lot of them provide, you know, services for women who have experienced domestic violence or have, you know, OBGYN concerns.
What do supporters of the Mexico City policy say?
So the World spoke to Arina Grosu from the Family Research Council, and here's what she had to say.
There's no reason why we should be funding abortion anywhere. There are so many other nonprofit NGOs internationally that do really amazing work in healthcare, humanitarian relief, and other areas that this money, millions of dollars, would go to them instead.
Pro-life activists I've spoken to over the last couple of years have made arguments that it's a slippery slope with abortion and population control abroad. You go to an impoverished country where sometimes there's racial tensions, there's conflicts, and you start informing or suggesting about abortions. And how do you make sure you're not telling certain people you don't have the right to have your children? And listen, that is not a fear that is without precedent. So what a lot of pro-life activists say is we have no business having any financial association with any type of abortion campaigns or operations.
The World's Jasmine Garz there. Marie Stopes International is a nonprofit reproductive health group that will be affected by this. It gets 17% of its annual funding from USAID. Now it won't get any of that money. Micah Van Min is a strategy and development director for Marie Stopes International. She described the kind of work that it does across the globe.
Can imagine us having a service, let's say, in Nigeria and going into very remote areas through an outreach team, for example, which is a group of midwives and nurses who go into a remote village and provide a full range of family planning services. These women have very little access to healthcare services and no access, or before we came, let's say, no access to family planning services. And so the impact on their lives is significant, because by being able to choose when you have children, you can take control of your life, and you can decide how many children you want, how many children, you know, you can care for, and you can feed, and you can put through school. but also like it allows women to take time to develop their careers or, you know, to work in the market or wherever they work to make money, or they even, you know, pursue education. So having that kind of basic level of control over your fertility is so important for women everywhere, but also in Nigeria.
Yeah, right. I mean, Micah, you must have seen some of this up close with the time you spent on the ground.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Many, many stories and many women. I was in Senegal for about 5 years. And, you know, you can imagine you go into this village and you have like, I don't know, 30, 40 women, sometimes more, sitting, you know, under a tree or in a small hut. And they're all listening to our teams explaining what is family planning and what does it do, what does it not do. And I remember one woman coming up to me and going, "You can really make this stop." And I'm like, "Yes." And she's like, I had 9 pregnancies. I have 7 live children, which is still alive. If I have another pregnancy, this will kill me and make it stop. And, you know, and we could there and then give her an IUD. And that would, you know, she was about 39 years old, and an IUD, you know, can protect you from pregnancies for like 10 years.
As you've talked this through, Micah, it feels very much like a debate between people who argue morality and people who argue healthcare. Since you've been doing this work, have you actually seen the two sides come together in the field?
It's a very interesting question. I think you're absolutely right. It is very much a morality / health discussion. What I find is that the morality discussion, you know, it's not an easy topic. We all acknowledge and know that. The further away you get from the woman, the more important the morality discussion becomes. The closer you get to the woman, the less it matters, because she knows what's good for her and what's healthy for her and what's healthy for her family. Not only does she know, her husband knows. And also their religious leader will know. So the religious leader who is in a community who sees his women in his area falling pregnant, suffering all the consequences of all these pregnancies that their bodies cannot deal with, and that, you know, the number of children that they cannot necessarily send to school or, you know, raise in a way that gives them the full potential to be, you know, very, very strong adults. They see that. They see it on an everyday level. And they will never, never argue the morality question.
You probably know about this photograph that's been published of Donald Trump signing the gag order yesterday, surrounded by all men, all white men.
Yes.
What did you think when you saw that?
I think I've seen that picture before, but with different men. Yeah, it's shocking. I mean, it's easy to be in the Oval Office house and probably feel that you're doing a good thing, that you're doing a good thing for women, that you're doing a good moral thing. But I would invite all of them. Oh, God, I would love it to come to, I don't know, anywhere. Like, let's go to Nigeria and show you the women that this is impacting. Speak to her and see if you would still feel that you're doing the right thing.
Micah Van Min is the Strategy and Development Director with Marie Stopes International. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.